I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Talking Cats.
I was like, wait a second, what do I have to do over? I have to start the podcast. Hey, my name is Sarah, and welcome back to another episode of Talking Fast. Alongside me is manager Jacob, like every single week. But what are you drinking today, Jacob?
Well, Sarah, you know, I've got a Barbet here. This is my first time testing it, so I'm going to do a little taste test here.
This is not sponsored, by the way.
It's not sponsored at all, but I like them. It's non-alcoholic sparkling water, but it's got some like interesting flavors. So what I have is a Love Bite, because we're recording this kind of just ahead of Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. This is going to be released in the future, but it's a tart pink grapefruit and a cheeky bite of fresh ginger with earthy juniper.
Juniper.
Hold on. ASMR.
Why do we have to clarify that it's non-alcoholic sparkling water? Like, wouldn't that just be sparkling water?
Well, their whole thing is like pitched as an alternative.
Because it looks like a beer.
Yeah, it's like a social beverage.
I'm not going to lie to you. When you brought it out at first, I was like, I didn't get the memo that we were cracking open some cold ones on the episode today.
It's a buzz without a buzz is what I'm going to say. Wow. If you use that,
it's
I want some money.
It's trademarked. Jacob Morris. Oh, that's not even what your company name is
called. Watch, that's already their slogan. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's just like
it's
in
good,
your
though.
Subconscious.
It's refreshing. And I think it's gonna set us up for a good it's gonna set us up for a good episode. What are you drinking?
I mean, a little rude of you to not bring me one, but that's fine.
I apologize.
I have, well, it's like one sip left of my Milky's coffee.
Milky's.
This is my favorite oat milk latte in the city.
Okay, do you add like anything to it, like a flavor?
No, that's why this one's really good. I don't know what type of milk they use. I've never actually looked at what they're using behind the counter. But this is the best one. And everyone that I've brought to the city, I take them to Milky's and Stacked Market.
Yeah.
They also agree that it is their
is
best.
Is it new? I've never heard of it.
Sorry, no, I think it started in the West or East End. Maybe North or South.
I'm in East End.
No, I think it started in the East End, and then they opened one in Stacked Market, and it's beautiful.
I'm going to lose my East Ender badge here.
I honestly don't know. I think it's on Dundas East or West.
So it's good.
Yeah, it's really good. And also just like, look how cute the cup is.
I was going to say, it looks like
again, not sponsored, but it's great. And I post about them a lot on Instagram. So
I like the pinkish top, red.
Yeah, it's like
top.
Salmon. That's not salmon. Red. That's not red. That's not red.
Sarah, what are we reading or watching this week?
I'm in a reading slump. So that's why none of these episodes have had me talking about what I'm reading recently, but I recently started watching Only Murders in the Building.
The Selena Gomez
so
show.
So good.
Disney Plus?
Yes, Disney Plus. Disney Plus has had all the great content recently. It had Abbott Elementary, it had The Bear, and now it has Only Murders in the Building. Yeah, so I finally started watching it, and the best part is I went into this show, much like The Bear, not knowing anything about it other than like Selena Gomez, Martin Short, and Steve Martin. So like,
which
you can't
is
really
a huge
go wrong.
Cast.
I am obsessed with it. I'm only halfway through, so no spoilers.
What kind of show is it? Like, is it?
It's like a mystery. It's like a comedy and a mystery. And apparently, Steve Martin has had this idea to make this show for like decades, and he just like never did, and then he finally did it, and it's very good. And it's like twist and turns, and it's giving like Glass Onion. It's
okay, giving, I was gonna say, like, I'm in
Knives
that.
Out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would recommend it. It's very good so
and
far.
And they have a couple seasons, or
yeah. So there's I'm only in season one. There's season two, and then they're filming season three. Okay, and Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep
and Paul Rudd was
I
in
know,
the.
Oh I know. Oh my god, I love Paul.
Yeah,
Rudd.
Yeah, yeah. That's gonna be good. That's
so
be good.
I recommend watching that show if you haven't already.
100%.
What about you? What are you watching?
Okay, well, I caught up finally and I watched Wakanda Forever.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
And so it's streaming now. I actually saw it in the like one of the last days that it was in the theaters.
Oh, okay.
I hadn't seen a blockbuster big like movie like that in so long. But it was good. It was fantastic. Good. Although I went and saw it at a 9:30 showing.
It's too late.
It's almost a 3-hour movie.
I can't do any movie past like 7 p.m. now because almost all movies are 3 hours long. And it's like way too exhausting.
This is maybe TMI, but like 2 hours into the movie, I had to use the washroom. And I just didn't because I was like, being uncomfortable is going to make me like stay awake right now.
That was me and that was me and Avatar, to be honest. That was like a 3 hour and a bit movie.
Ah, it's too much. It's way too much.
Okay, so what are you listening to right now?
What I've been listening to on the podcast front, I'm still listening to Armchair Expert. Mm. I had no idea that they had like this offshoot show that I was put onto, which I think is called Armchair Anonymous, which is basically like our voicemail segment, except people are calling in and speaking to them, which is something that maybe we could do like...
This phone I got right here. I promise you it actually works and I kept all the pieces so that we can actually like hook it up one day.
We will do this one day. It's cool. So they have like little segments where it'll be like a theme for the episode and little stories are told mm-hmm. by the audience on the episodes. They're funny, really funny.
I love that.
What are you listening to?
I'm actually listening to our next guest. Preston Pablo is here, which is so exciting. I saw him perform like almost a year ago now at the Drake Underground. And then I started listening to him. And then now his song is like everywhere on the radio. So I've been listening to like more of his discography.
Discography, yeah.
Discography. The CGs is like a weird.
He's good.
It's difficult, but he's so good. And we are having him on the show right after this. First time I saw this guest perform was at School Night, a monthly musician showcase in Toronto at the Drake Underground. Flash forward just 10 months, and the next guest is a 3-time Juno nominee and will be headlining his first show back at the Drake Underground this March. He's the man behind the hit single Flowers Need Rain, which is double platinum with over 50 million streams. Please welcome to the show, Preston Pablo. Whoa,
that sounds crazy when you say
like that. Like, yeah, I know. When I like you type it out, it's crazy, yeah, especially like such a short period of time, because I went to go see your show at School Night, which... Yeah. Was the first time, to be honest, I'd ever heard of you. And I swear to God, it's like when you get a red car and then you constantly see red cars. Yeah. Like, I was hearing you every time I walked into, like, the grocery store. I was like, oh, my God, I know that guy. I know that guy. Yeah. I saw him perform. So how crazy is that, like, all of this has happened in such a short period of time?
Yeah, it's very crazy. It feels very crazy as well. It's just, like, something that you don't, like, plan for that kind of stuff. You want it to happen. You envision it happening. It's, like... It's all like a dream and like a desire, but you don't like plan like, okay, when this happens, I'm going to do this. It just kind of happens and you're like, oh, I remember thinking of this and now I'm just here.
Was there like a point in the past like year, let's say, that you were like, oh, like this is like that moment of this is really happening?
I think, yeah, like the last like couple months have definitely been like that. And like this past summer felt like that just because I was actually traveling and playing shows and doing press for the first time and just like being a quote unquote artist. Like outside of my bedroom and outside of being in the studio. So I think all that, like that real life experience and like going out in the field and being an artist felt like that was like, whoa, I'm actually doing this.
Do you thrive off of that like energy?
Yeah,
being
for
out
sure.
There?
Yeah. For sure.
There's a huge difference between like producing music probably in your bedroom mm-hmm. and then getting out there and being on stage performing in front of an audience. Whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a massive difference. I think it feels like during that period of like when you're doing that, when you're on the road doing all that, it feels really good. The hard part for me is adjusting to when I'm not doing that.
Right.
It's like the highest of the high. Mm. And then like, it's not necessarily like a low, but just like all the energy is kind of like gone away. And like you're by yourself in your apartment. You're like, damn, like I have to cook supper again. Like I have to do laundry again.
Yeah. I guess it's going back to being like a normal person.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Being an artist. You're like, wait, like how do I get to that point? Exactly. Where I was like that all the time.
Are you an extrovert like that? Do you recharge? Mm. Do you need those moments to recharge at home?
For sure. I definitely do. I think before like this past year, I was that was what I was like very comfortable with doing. I still am. I love being alone. I love just doing my own thing. But I got used to like being around people and being like in high energy environments and like singing on stage and just like experiencing all that all at once, that when I didn't have it for a little bit, it was weird again. I was like, I had to figure out how to act again, like just by myself and just hanging out and chilling.
When there's not like all these eyeballs on you and having to perform exactly, and stuff. Yeah. So I said a bit in the intro, but 3-time Juno nominee, like what does it feel like? What's it feel like when you hear that? And how was it like when you first heard it? Like be announced that you were nominated.
It just feels weird. Like, it's so weird to hear that. It's not something, again, like I didn't plan to be nominated for any Junos. I know when I found out that I was going to be performing there, like that was already insane. Like I was already super excited. And the fact that I got to, that I'll get to do it with like Banks and Ranks and Rev, who are like super close, part of the team, people who are important to me. So I was very happy with just that. And then when like, I found out I was going to be nominated. It was just crazy. Like, it just, it feels weird to even just sit here and talk about it.
Weird. And 3 times too, like in your first year is insane.
It's crazy.
In big categories as well.
Yeah. It's, I think like the most shocking part of being nominated was when I saw like the category and then my name and then like The Weeknd's name. I was like,
yeah,
that's what I was gonna ask.
I'm like
you
up
about.
Against The Weeknd is insane,
because you've talked about that a lot, about The Weeknd being kind of an inspiration.
He's huge,
both,
like a huge
both
artist
musically artist. And then also just being a Canadian in you know this industry as well. So like, what is it like, what does it feel like to have those names side by side?
It's definitely, I feel, it feels really good. It's like a rewarding feeling because it means that I'm being acknowledged on like the same platform as these artists who are massive artists. But it's also like very much scary because I'm so new to all this and like I'm young and I'm literally just starting like my career as an artist.
Yeah.
And to see like my name beside someone like The Weeknd is very daunting and very scary, but it's exciting as well. So
that is exciting. Does it feel like a little less, because imagine performing at the Junos for your first time is a very nerve-wracking experience. Is it a little less nerve-wracking because you're performing with friends and not just doing it on your own?
Yeah, for sure. I think like having familiar faces on stage will be like just that, just thinking of that alone like is already a little more calming. And my family is also going to be there, which is like
really
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, who from your family?
So my brother, my sister, and my mom and dad, and then I have like some aunts and uncles who live in Edmonton already, so they'll be there as well.
That's
have
amazing.
They seen you perform before?
They have, yeah.
Okay.
So my parents actually have been the people out of like all my family who have seen me perform the least, because they live back in Timmins, which is like very far from
quite a ways up there.
They haven't had the chance to see me perform as much as some other family members, so I'm excited that they'll be at the Junos.
That's a wild stage to go from not really seeing you too much and then one of the biggest stages, if not like the biggest stage
in Canadian music.
Yeah, it's wild. It's gonna be, I'm sure it'll be like pretty shocking for them as well, because the last time they saw me perform was like last summer, so it's going to be a big difference for sure.
What can we expect from that performance? Have you guys started like figuring it out?
We actually had a call today, which was like, it was a long call, just like kind of going through everything. We're working with a really cool creative director who's Montreal based. So he's kind of helping us put together the show like visually, and just there's a lot of like moving parts. There's like a lot of video screens and like lighting and like cryo jets and all this crazy stuff, so he's got
you know it's serious when the cryo jets
what I mean. Like I had to ask, because they were talking, they kept saying cryojet, and I was like, I'm sorry, I just like I don't know what a cryojet is, like, and they're like, it's that thing that just like spits out like smoke or CO2.
You just gotta ask for the button though. That's like my life goal.
Like the DJs
just,
who have
I have a couple of DJ friends and they've never given me the button, but I like, my life goal is to have the crowd
to get
button.
To that
so
place.
If you can get that, you're there obviously clearly, but you hit the button and that's huge.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just gonna be a lot of like lighting, a lot of different like kind of mood switches. So going from like high energy to like more intimate stuff and playing with color and just the graphics on the floor and on the walls, like it's gonna be a lot, but it'll be
so good. You like getting involved with that stuff? Because I know obviously
I do,
music
yeah.
is one side of it,
yeah,
but like this is a huge creative
production,
like,
right?
Definitely, yeah. I think it's like being involved on that side of things, like it's just another like artist bag that I like to get into. It's time consuming for sure, so having people like a creative director, just people like helping put that together is definitely important, because it is so much, especially for something like the Junos, such like a high production level of production that you need that team. But definitely like being on those calls and being involved on the creative side is important too, because that's a whole other like execution of art. If you're not a part of that, then it feels like you're missing something. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
are you someone that's like, it's just an honor to be nominated, or like, are you a competitive guy? Like, do you want to win?
I mean, I feel like a little bit of both.
Like, it is an honor to be nominated. I'm not saying it's not. I've never been nominated for Juno, obviously. But like, you're like, are you competitive? Like, do you like, you want to win?
Definitely, yeah. I definitely want to win. It's I've always been somewhat competitive, but I'm not like a rude. I'm not like rude competitive. You know what I mean? Like, whoever wins, I'll be happy for them.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
I would definitely like. I would like to win. You know, I want to be the one to win.
Yeah. We're gonna play this back when he like beats The Weeknd.
Yeah, that'd be insane. Like, oh my god, I don't even know what I would do at that point.
So talking about chasing highs and like going like from extremes, that's gonna be the. Probably, I mean, like, I don't know your life, but probably one of the busiest weeks of your life, because you are performing at the Junos and you're 3-time nominated.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the week, you have your first 2 headlining shows all in the same week in March, one in Montreal, and your sold out show in Toronto.
Yes.
What is that week going to be like in the life of Preston Pablo?
It's going to be crazy for sure. Like you mentioned, it's going to be definitely stressful, but I'm going to just do my best. Like, try and eat healthy that week. Try and like, I work out a lot. So hopefully leading up to that, I'll still be in the gym. And hopefully when I'm there, I can find some time to work out. Cause that really helps me just like decompress and like take some stress out, lift some weights, you know?
Yeah.
Are you going to try and take any of the learnings from the process of getting ready for the Junos and apply it to your own shows? Cause this is the first time you're headlining them.
I think so. Yeah. I think there'll be like, because the level of production is going to be so high and because there's going to be so much going on at once, I think I'll definitely learn a lot. Like, leading up to it and being there and just that whole process, I feel like I'll learn a lot and hopefully take some of those skills into prepping for those.
I thought you were gonna say hopefully like taking the, what are they called, what are those things called that we're just talking about, the jets?
Oh, crowd jets.
You just try and take hopefully, some of the crowd jets with you, be like, you're done with these, right? The Junos are good. Can I borrow these?
Bring a really big backpack.
No, it's just my checked bag. Yeah. It's fine.
That's smart though. I'm not gonna lie.
And then in terms of the, so your headlining shows too, I mean, I was scrolling through your social media earlier and you've done a lot of covers. I've seen Billie Eilish, Justin Bieber, Holly Humberstone as well. Yeah. Are we going to see any covers at these shows? Mm. What kind of a set list are we looking at?
Yeah, so we're building that right now. We went, like last year, we were playing a lot of opening spots. So that was like a 30-minute set list. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm able to play like a headlining show, we have to double the set list. So it's going to be like around an hour of music. So I'm figuring out what to add, because I have a lot of unreleased music that I want to play, but I also have like some older music that has been out for a while that I want to add to the set. And then of course, like, we're talking about doing covers. My only thing with covers is that I'm honestly afraid that like if I play a cover that people will like that more than like the rest of the stuff. So I don't want people to leave and be like, oh yeah, he was so good, like especially when he played that one like Justin Bieber song. Like, you know, I want them to remember my music and like get to a place where people are coming to the shows and they already know me and my music, and then that's when I feel like I'll be more comfortable doing covers. But right now, like, when not everyone knows me, they kind of just might know the one song, like Flowers Need Rain. It'd be nice for them to leave feeling like, okay, we like this person, like we like all of his music, rather than that Flowers Need Rain song is really good, and that like one Justin Bieber cover was really good.
For sure. At the same time though, I'll say, because I won't say which cover I'm talking about specifically, but like there was one that I'm like, this cover is better than the original. And on the flip side of that, I'm like, he just has a nicer voice. He's more musical. I would prefer this over the other artists. So
that's interesting.
There's a flip side to it too.
That's true. I never thought about that. That is smart.
But also, like, your Toronto show did sell out, so people clearly are going for
that's
you.
True.
So just like, make the set list of your dreams.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that like, is what's that process like though? Because you said you're in the process right now. Because obviously with every concert you go to, there's kind of moments in which you're supposed to hear like the big songs or the certain songs. So how is it being on the other side and kind of building that out for a longer set?
It's interesting. It's a very new process for me. I actually, like, my first show was back in April, so I haven't been playing shows for that long. I've been trying to like get out to as many shows as like a consumer and just like watching artists I like play, because I find that helps a lot, like being in the position of...
Do you say the first show you played was in April?
Yeah.
And like, now you're almost, well, less than a year later, you're playing the Junos then?
Yeah, it's crazy. That's what I mean. Cool. Like, that's why
huge.
Thank
you. Congrats.
All this stuff is so new to me. That's why it's all like, it's very overwhelming, because I'm just sitting here like, I've never done any of this. Like, I'm learning like on the fly. Like,
but you wouldn't, I mean, like, I've only seen you perform once. And was that April? question mark? That was your first show? Because I never would have known. And you know what? I think I said that to Allie. I'm pretty sure I said, oh my God, his stage presence is so good. And I think she told me at the time it was your first show and I just didn't remember. But that's insane that was your first show. Wow. I feel like when he's like on stage beating The Weeknd, I'm going to be like, I was on his first show.
I was at the first show.
That's going to be my claim to fame. I couldn't do it for Justin Bieber, any of those like huge artists. But like once you become a huge artist,
I'll do it.
I'm going to claim that, just so you know.
And then so talking about, I mean, we talked briefly about just you have a big back catalog of, of stuff and then also unreleased tracks too. And Sarah and I were talking before the podcast as well, because we're like listening back to like previous singles that you released. And I'm not, I don't want to shade like other artists by any means, but you know, when you have a song or someone has a song blow up, obviously like one of your songs is blown up with Flowers, but the rest of your stuff hits as well, is obviously like, I want to give you a compliment because it's just true. But then like in terms of what you have coming up of unreleased music, do we have an album? Like what are we looking at there?
Yeah. So ideally for me, like honestly, last year we were supposed to have a project out, but because of what happened with Flowers, we kind of, we delayed it at first. We're like, we're going to kind of see where this goes. And then it kept going. So we were like,
ride that wave.
Yeah, we just, exactly. We just rode the wave. So this year, like, I really want to get a project out. It won't be like a full album.
Like an EP or
It'll be a smaller project, a smaller body of work. But yeah, just putting out a project to kind of showcase like the layers of myself as an artist. Because like you said, it's, it happens all the time where artists will put out like a song and it will blow up, and then their older music might get like overshadowed by that huge song a little bit, or stuff they put out might get overshadowed. So I just really want to, I feel like now is a good time to kind of put out a project to showcase like the other layers of me as an artist, the other like kind of the other kinds of music that I like making, just to kind of stray away from that one song. Like, oh yeah, I know him from that one song. I want people to know me for like all of my music.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of goes with like the next question that we had, which is like, what's it like to release music in the industry right now? Because it does feel like it's just dominated by singles.
Yeah.
Especially since you've been riding the high of one single for the last like almost year.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think like singles, it's huge right now. Like every artist, every especially new artists and up and coming artists, it's all singles. And I think it's smart to do that. But it also, as an artist, like I'm speaking for me as an artist, it gets kind of tiring because you want to put out like projects that have more meaning, and like you want to make projects that have like that are conceptualized, and you have the visuals that are one piece, and like the music kind of tells a story, you know what I mean? It's hard to do that with just one song. And then like singles are usually chosen to be like, it's chosen to be a single for a reason. It's meant to like go to radio or do really well, so you kind of have to lean more towards like the pop sounding songs, the songs that will quote unquote be a hit, right? So it kind of leaves those other songs that are maybe a little more like alternative or a little more left field, it kind of leaves those like out of the question. So
well, like I remember John Mayer a few months ago was doing an interview, and he was saying like if he was wanting to release his next album based on success, he wouldn't release it as an album, he would just do a different single drop every single week, because then those are all more likely to chart than like a full album, which is really interesting. And I'm sure like because of streaming, that's like a massive factor of that.
Yeah. So I was also, it's kind of on the same topic, because I was listening, I think it was on a podcast, you maybe mentioned this, talking about the layers that you have and you want to share with the people that are going to, you know, consume your music. I want to get this right, because I think you mentioned that music lets you feel both safe and vulnerable at the same time.
Yeah.
Which are concepts, when I heard that, I was like, it resonated with me, but I had to think about it a little bit, because those are concepts that don't really go together.
Yeah.
Vulnerability and safety aren't two things that people put side by side a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So like, where does the inspiration for your music kind of fit into those two concepts, and how do you combine them and feel those two things at the same time?
I think like for me, when I write, I find I write best when I'm going through either, it doesn't even really matter what I'm going, it just has to be like something that I'm going through like in my life. Whether, so the first like batch of songs that I ever made were directly inspired from like my first breakup. And that for me was like huge at the time. It was the first time I had ever like been in love. I was in high school, you know what I mean?
So
I got, I went through a breakup, and that for me was so like, I was just feeling so many emotions. Like I was going through so much at the time, and I was, my only like outlet and the only way I could like organize those feelings and kind of figure out why I was feeling certain ways was through music. And like, I just turned immediately to music. I would write songs based on the breakup and just based on how I felt. And then now, like, I'm at a time in my life where I'm going through a lot, like, personally, just, like, growth as a person, growth as an artist. I'm experiencing like success and traveling and all these new things. So I'm writing like directly based off of those experiences. So I think the easiest way for me to write music is like just based off of what I'm going through currently in my life. And whether that's like happy or sad or scary, like I pull from like real life experiences. That's why before this year, my process like with writing was very different. I would write a song and go like 4 or 5 months without writing. I would just like live and do whatever I had to do. And then I would only write when it felt like, okay, I need to get something off my chest, or I need to like speak about something through my music. Then I would write a song. It's different now because it's more of like, it's a job now.
Yeah,
that's what I was going to ask, is if your songwriting process has changed. So what's it look like now that it's, because I'm sure it's like anything that's of the creative industries. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes when you're being forced to do something creative, it makes it even harder to do it. Like, do you have, like, do you just go, I'm going to sit down today and write a song, or what's that new process like for you?
Yeah, there are days like that where it's like you have a session like at this time with this person, like you're going to go there and write a song. Mm-hmm. And that's completely okay. I understand like why there needs to be sessions like that. Like I can't just go, I'm not in a place right now where I can spend 5 months without writing a song. And like, I need the experience. Yeah. I need to go travel to like Europe. I can't do that. You
go
know
on an Eat, Pray, Love trip to find the next album.
Yeah, but I feel like the process of writing itself is very similar to what it was before. It's just the volume is different now. Yeah. I'm just writing more, and I'm writing with new people, which is something that I never did before. I would just write by myself or with my brother.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, because you also mentioned, I think I watched something that where you mentioned, because you're from Timmins,
I am,
which is not known as like a creative epicenter of Canada by any
definitely
means.
Not.
Isn't Shania Twain from Timmins?
She is,
Maybe it is a good place to, you know, for people to come out.
I mean, if you're going to go based off population and then now like successful, like Juno-nominated artists, right. I bet you like
it's changing.
It's changing. I think it's actually probably like you're adding to like the percentage being way higher.
Yeah. But was that your perception growing up, that like, were there a lot of creative outlets? Maybe there were.
No, it definitely wasn't.
Was it more or less like just you?
Yeah, there? It was. I had like a small group of friends who made music and who were creatives. Like I had some friends who like did photography or who would come over and shoot like little visuals for me when I needed it. But for the most part, it was like there's really nothing else other than like what we were doing. It's very like DIY. If you wanted a music video, you had to like have a friend who could somewhat operate a camera, or you literally just had to like give your best friend a camera and be like,
and then just follow me around. Everything's just like an artistic choice that like messes up.
But no, it was interesting. Like I wouldn't say at the time I probably felt a little like my feelings towards it were probably like more negative, because I was like, oh, I wish I had like studios, or I wish I had this, I wish I had that. Mm-hmm. But I think looking back on it now, even though it hasn't been that long ago, it really like shaped me into like my own artist. I didn't really have like, there was no like local sound for me to kind of like mimic or feel like I needed to sound like to fit in. It was very just like open, and it was like a clean slate. So I think I appreciate it more now than I did back then. Back then it was frustrating. I was like, ah, this sucks. Like all my videos are in the same place. There's only like one cool wall in Timmins. But
it's only one cool wall.
I swear.
The town bridge. Yeah, like, literally. I was a big bridge guy in the early days.
We had like one little bridge. It was right. You could see like Tim Hortons in the background.
And they're like, they're not paying me, so I don't want to.
Exactly.
So we're just talking about then the big transition between, you know, being in Timmins, shooting at the local Tim Hortons.
Within
the background and the one wall being like the creative center of the Timmins there. What's the difference then being here and working in the industry with a ton of other amazing creatives, I imagine you're collaborating with? You already talked about it a little bit. Like
it's a crazy, like I feel like a good way to describe it is like being in like your favorite store. And you see like all this stuff that you love, and you're just like trying different things on. Like it feels very much like that, because it's also new and like everything's bright and shiny. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, what if we do a video with this director, or try this, or like work with this producer, or try a song like this. So it's very much like experimental, and I'm getting to do so many crazy things that I would have never thought I could do living in Timmins. So it's very exciting, but it also, there's times where it's overwhelming, because there's just so much like out there. There's so much to do, so much to utilize. It feels like, oh my God, like it's never gonna end, or I'm never gonna figure out the magic combo of directors and producers and this and that. But it's very fun.
Well, you were saying before that the nice thing about like being in a place like Timmins and just making music by yourself is you wouldn't take influence from other people. Mm-hmm. Is that something that's a little harder now, is to not like just be taking on like what people are telling you your music should be, and then also just like being influenced by people around you?
Yeah, it's definitely a new struggle. It's a new challenge. Just the amount of like eyes and opinions that are coming my way now is a lot more. Like the volume has been increased, but it's just all about like balance, trying to figure out. I feel like a lot of this is just figuring out that like healthy balance of like how much outside input you take in, how much you trust yourself as a creative. Because I always have to remind myself that before any of this, I was just a kid writing songs in my bedroom. Like Flowers Need Rain, for example, was a song. Like that whole hook, the Flowers Need Rain part, the part that everyone like remembers, is something that I wrote in Timmins sitting on my bed like by myself. So there's moments where everything feels so crazy and I'm like, what's gonna be the next song? Like, how am I gonna do this again? How am I gonna like continue the success? I feel like I have to remind myself in those moments that I'm just a kid that writes songs, and like just like getting back to that like super grounded, like humbled self is important.
Is it ever hard that your entire like, because you write your own music and you said you pull it from like real life experiences, very emotional places. Is it hard sometimes being like that vulnerable and writing a song and being like, do I want the world to like hear this? Is that something you ever struggle with?
I think so. Yeah, I think I've always been like a pretty open person. Mm-hmm. And I think through music, it's just made me more open. Like, I feel like if there's a place for me to like get those feelings out, music is probably the safest place, because it can kind of like mask it with like some beautiful piano chords.
Yeah, that's true.
If I was just like, you take away the chords, it's just like me complaining or crying. Yeah, that's true. What I mean? So
I was gonna say that's how it resonates with most people. Sometimes like that for me, for music to get into it, I'll hear a song for the first time, be like, this is like a bop.
Yeah.
And then on like the 16th listen, as it's like seeped into my subconscious, I'm like, oh, actually I realize I guess I'm going through some shit right now.
You're like, why do I relate to this song
like
so
why
much?
Why is this on repeat right now? But that's got to be a good feeling too, because as as your audience grows as well, like that's probably how people are resonating with your music too, right?
Exactly. I think that for me is like the special part of music, is just that like connection. And like when you put your headphones in, or when you play a song and it makes you feel like a certain way, like that to me is a special part. That's what I love about making music. Like all my favorite songs that I've ever made, some of them may never get released, but like there's always that moment that whether you're in the studio or whether you're just playing it on guitar, where you like get those goosebumps and it just like makes you feel something, you know? And when that like happens, that's how you know it's special. Even if the song never comes out, just that like, the fact that it made you feel a certain way, whether it's happy or sad or just gave you goosebumps, like that to me is why I love writing songs.
So you did just have another song come out, I, which I love. It's very different than anything else I've ever heard, which I really like.
Yeah, I was just going to say, feeling like talking about what you were just talking about like feeling that. I was just playing a rec league, like soccer league, but I listened to that song on the way to the game, the final the other night.
Did you win?
I love that.
Yeah, we won the final. I scored the final. I was like, I dedicate that game to you. That was your doing.
But so what about that song is special to you? And I guess what did it make you, or what did you want it to make others feel like listening to it?
I think a big thing, like listening to that song and what I wanted that song to kind of be, is just like a confidence booster. At the time when I was writing that song, I was with Banks Ranks and another great artist by the name of Jamie Fine. And her personality is just like, it was the second day I had ever met her. So we were doing like two sessions back to back, and I was written on the second day. And her personality is just so like, there's so much energy, and like she's very like outspoken, and she's not afraid to like say how she feels. And I was so like inspired by that and like just the energy in the room that day. And I was experiencing a lot of like good things at the time. I was traveling and like playing shows, and I just felt really good. So I wanted to write something that kind of explained that and that gave off that energy. So that song is just that. It's just a confidence booster, make you feel good, make you feel like you are that guy.
Do you think Preston, like sitting in his bedroom in Timmins, Ontario, listening to like that song now would be like, what the hell?
Yeah, definitely. I would have like, that Preston would have been like, calm down, bro. Like, you're good.
Like you're filming in front of the one wall we have.
Relax, bro.
Well, you've mentioned Banks and Rakes a couple of times. How did you meet those guys?
So there's like, it's kind of a long story. It's kind of confusing, but I'm going to try and break it down as best I can. So Banks Ranks consists of two people. Mm-hmm. There's Soke and Yannick. So Soke, he's got like these crazy dreads to help paint the picture. But Soke had a friend from Montreal. They're Montreal based. So mm-hmm. Soke's friend from Montreal ended up in Timmins somehow. And this friend was working at a restaurant that my friend worked at. So like these two friends, my friend and Soke's friend, were working at a restaurant and talking about music because they were both like artists and producers kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They were just like trading info and music. And my homie had sent my music to Soke's homie. Soke's homie had then messaged me and was like, yo, your friend sent me your music. I'm going to send it to my friend. And that friend was Soke. And then Soke heard my stuff. And then he reached out to me on Instagram. So long story short, he DM'd me.
And now you guys are doing something for the Junos together.
Yeah, exactly. It's awesome. A weird story, but like the way it happened is...
Canada's so small. Meant
to be. Yeah.
Like, shout out to that restaurant, I guess.
For real. 100%. Shout out. It was a wing. Oh, it's called Wacky Wings.
Shout out Wacky Wings. If you're ever in Timmins, Ontario, go to Wacky Wings.
Let's go.
One of the origin stories of Preston.
And the only wing restaurant in Timmins.
In case you get confused. Exactly. It's the one. So you've mentioned that Justin Bieber is one of your favorite artists.
For sure.
What about him do you admire as an artist and that you hope to take in your own art form?
I think just the fact that he's been able to do what he's done for the amount of years that he's done it, like being a huge pop star at like 12, 13 years old is unfathomable, because I'm dealing with like my career at this level is compared to his at 12 years old is like an enormous gap. But I'm like, there's so many struggles that I deal with and like I feel like this is so overwhelming. So the fact that he was doing that at like 13 years old to me is insane. And obviously just like his music is insane, I think, from like as a vocalist, I can appreciate like his vocals are amazing, and just he's been able to kind of make music in so many different like pockets, like whether it's R&B, more like ballad, pop. I just think like all around he's just been like the most successful and most amazing artist that I've ever like witnessed.
Would he be like a bucket list collaboration then?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Who are some other people on that list?
The Weeknd for sure. I love Dominic Fike. That'd be really cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. There's so many though. But yeah, those
and
are
some
like
some great
my
Canadian
top.
Names too. Mm-hmm. Like such good music comes out of this country.
It's crazy. Like the last little while of music has been like Canada's right up there for sure.
It feels like Canadians just hit like once they like finally get out of Canada, it's like it's because they've hit like this like astronomical level. Like you've got The Weeknd performing at the Super Bowl, and then even like people like Alessia Cara who win like best new artist of the Grammys and all that stuff. It's like they hit like another level. So
I do want to pitch the I'm sure it's been pitched before, the Shania collab.
Yeah. Oh my God, Timmins would love
that'd
it.
That'd be crazy. Timmins would freak
out. You'd have to go back to Timmins. You do a big show. The Wacky Wing is the food supplier on site.
Catering. There's cryo jets probably on the stage.
And then Shania is the brand reveal. She comes up.
Look, she's doing a lot more like poppy, like leaning more into that like realm. So I don't think that's totally unrealistic.
I think we can make it happen.
For sure.
I think we can. We're putting it in the universe here. And then again, we'll play
it here
all
first.
This. We set it here first. We'll play it all back. Once it all happens we were here first. Okay, so obviously the past like not even year 10 months has been insane for you. What are you hoping the next 10 months looks like?
I hope it's just as crazy if not crazier, because that would be a good sign. But just I've fallen in love with performing and just being on stage. I feel like very comfortable, and it's just a way it's a whole other way for me to express myself and just learn myself as an artist. So I think playing as many shows as possible this year would be great. And then just writing music that a lot of the music I have has been written like a year ago now, and it's still sitting and hasn't came out. So just writing more music that feels fresh to me and that is like based off of what I'm going through now, and just putting that out, I think is the plan. And a project, of course. I really want to get like an EP out this year.
I think all the fans do too, because you sold out your Toronto show.
Yeah.
At the time of this recording, there's still Montreal tickets
there
left.
There is, yes.
But I'm thinking it's going to be sold out, so I think it's going to be highly unlikely.
Which camera is it?
Your camera is this one.
Okay. If you are in Montreal or close to it, make sure you get tickets to my Montreal show.
It's gonna be good. Maybe we should fly to the Montreal show, because I don't know if we're gonna get into the Toronto one at this rate.
True.
We'll get you.
It's gonna be lineup stuff.
We got you.
My loud clapping will be in the background.
Yeah,
there.
I need the loud clap.
Set
the beat for the back.
Yeah, exactly. What are you most looking forward to about your first headlining shows?
Just getting to play a show that's like fully mine is what I'm looking forward to. Having full control of like the set and the way it's gonna flow and all the creative, like the lighting and the video wall or whatever we decide to bring in, and also the outfit I'm excited to put together.
I was gonna say, like, I think putting together, you have a couple fits you have to put together, because is your family gonna coordinate for the Junos or what?
I don't know. That's a good question though. Maybe we should. That'd be cool. That would be really cool. But yeah, putting together outfits is something, like fashion is something new for me as well.
Yeah.
And I've really like been enjoying that. So I'm excited to like see what I'm gonna wear for the Junos.
You're telling me the fashion scene isn't like just huge in Timmins, Ontario? That's shocking.
It's massive, actually. No.
It's really not. That's exciting. So I guess you've got the fashion we've got the fashion to look forward to. Mm-hmm. We've got your first solo shows, and then maybe you'll be a Juno winner by the next time we see you.
That would be insane. That'd be crazy. And the Shania Collab as well.
And the Shania Collab. Obviously, we can't forget about that. We'll make that one happen. Well, thank you so much for coming on Talking
Bass. Of
course,
thank you guys for having me.
You have your camera. If you want to plug yourself, whatever you want to plug, this is your moment.
Okay. Check out my music. My name is Preston Pablo. So if you search that up, you'll probably find it. I'm on social media, so follow me on there. And stream my new song, IAI, wherever you listen to music. Also, if you live in Montreal, I'm playing a show on the 15th. So you can get tickets to that at my website, which is PrestonPablo.com. And listen to my music. I think I already said that, but listen to my music.
If you didn't hear him, listen to his music.
Listen to his music.
Amazing.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's a wrap. That was wonderful. We're back with our voicemail segment. Just a reminder, if you want to ask us a question or ask for some life advice, you can DM us on Instagram at Talking Fast Show. You can send us an email at talkingfastshow@gmail.com. You can also put anonymous if you don't want to be known. We haven't gotten a lot of opportunities to give a ton of advice yet, but these questions kind of are, which is kind of exciting, especially because it's just the two of us to do it. And all three of these questions were directed specifically at the two of us.
Amazing.
You ready?
Yeah. Okay, I got the first one for you here, because this is kind of a two-parter as well. We have
different perspectives
basically
on it.
Basically, completely opposite side of the perspective on it. When would you recommend content creators get a manager?
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's the cliche of everyone's going to be different. For me, once I got to a point where, like, a couple brand deal offers a week were coming in, and to be honest, from the beginning, I didn't know what I was doing, as Jacob can probably attest to. He saw my early contracts. Probably signed my life away and, like, my firstborn child with them. That was the time where I was starting to learn about managers. I was like, oh, this is this thing that, because you first have to learn that people even have them. And I would say January 2021 is when I had a few managers reach out to me. I met with a handful of them before landing on Jacob here. So I would just say you kind of know when it's right. And usually they'll start reaching out to you, in my experience at least, when the time is right. That means you're getting enough traction outwardly that other people see the value in you. And I think that's a really good testament to when it's time. What about you? Someone that reached out
like
to me.
On the flip side, I mean, shout out to my sister, Emma Morris.
For the best. Like, we love Emma.
Basically scouting Sarah and putting me onto you.
But exactly.
From my perspective, that's 100% it. Like, I'm not necessarily going to know what you've been charging rate wise for like brand deal negotiation and whatnot. But what I'm looking for, and where maybe like a manager provide some value for a content creator, is like, do you have a really large and engaged community? Are you getting consistent views? And that, for it to be like worthwhile, you probably need to be, you know, in the tens of thousands of views on any one platform to kind of like really make sense from a business perspective of like driving revenue.
Yeah.
But yeah, an engaged community. And I think like the base level is, what I'm looking for do I believe that the person is really wanting to do this?
Well,
are they engaged and like a good talking head personality?
Like the biggest difference in the conversation I had with you as an example versus other managers was like in the first email you sent me, you were like, I can tell you're a producer because you can story tell and I can see the longevity in your content, which was something that, I mean, I knew at my core that I was doing, but having somebody immediately point out that they saw that was like, oh, okay. So like, you get it. And just from the creator perspective, it's totally normal to meet with a lot of people. I met with like three people and then Jacob, and just hop on a call or like a video call, Zoom or something. And you can really like suss out the vibe. I mean, granted, not everyone ends up co-hosting a podcast with a manager, but you definitely have to have a really good rapport for any of it to work out. Yeah,
well, that's whenever I'm having any kind of like early on calls with potential clients or new clients, what I say is like, you have to, this is going to be a really close working relationship. Mm-hmm. You have to build that foundation on like trust and vibe with the person, just that you get along. It's someone coming on to something that you've built, becoming a part of the team and like hopefully elevating you in some way. So you really want to like them first and foremost, I would say.
Yeah, I'm still vibing that out myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I still have my title of the co-host for the foreseeable future. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see. We didn't pen a paper or anything. Question number two of voicemail is, how do you have a successful work-life balance? Is there one? I liked the addition of, is there one?
Yeah, I mean, that's the, for me, it's tough because like, one, it's tough in the role that I have to.
You put out two hands when you do that.
Oh yeah, one. Number one, it's tough because the role that I have, it's just difficult to have.
You're not a 9-to-5.
Schedule. Yeah. Yeah, that just doesn't really exist. The other thing that makes it tough is that I really like what I do. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to pull back on that when like things are really rolling, a lot of like opportunities are coming through, new clients are coming on board, that kind of stuff. It's really exciting. So it's tough to take that step back. What I do is like try to find other hobbies and interests that like have nothing to do with work. Running's one of them, although you always point out that like I'll be trying to close deals and whatnot well at the stoplights, but those are the stoplights, so like the run's paused.
And I only know because you're like, oh yeah, like I'm going on a run, so like I'll get back to this in an hour, and then I see you emailing people and I go
15 minutes later.
It's either you were lying or no, like yeah, you're like literally answering emails while at the stoplight. So
yes, well, I don't know, like I don't want to claim to be an expert on it because I'm definitely not. For this, it's just like that's a work in progress, and I think that maybe that's the point, is being aware of that, being aware that a work-life balance should exist is maybe the good thing. And that's where I'm at, is like trying to, you know, have that teeter-totter balance out. What about you?
I'm going to look at it from the perspective of like my day job, my 9-to-5 job, because I think that relates to more people that probably listen to this. I really struggled with work-life balance for the first years of my career because I believed I had to like go above and beyond, and the hustle culture and all that kind of got to me very young. And then on a random Wednesday in December, they go, we don't need you anymore. Pack up your bags. And I had the little the banker's box of my belongings in it, and like standing there like, but wait, like I couldn't understand it because I put in so much time and effort and went above and beyond. Very quickly, I realized that you don't need to do that. Like, just be very good at your job, show up. Biggest thing I did was I took my email off my phone. I don't allow my company or my day job so I have to like, I can still get email on my phone. I can manually go into Safari and log in, but I don't allow myself to have GChat or email my phone, or else it just like, it's so easy to just, oh, I'll just check it. And then you're down the rabbit hole of constantly answering things. So I stopped doing that. I make sure I still like when I need to work like extra hours, or this week I'm working at 5 a.m. 3 days in a row. Like when I have to go above and beyond and do those things, I do it within context, but I don't allow myself to get so run down with it and do it for the purpose of thinking it will give me my next job, because it won't, to be honest. Like, I just don't have trust in companies enough that way, and that's totally fine. Like, you work for a company, and so you have to make sure you protect yourself the same way that they would protect themselves if something went wrong on your end, right?
Yeah.
So once I had that perspective, and losing my job young helped me have that perspective, it allowed me to have more of a work life balance, I believe.
Yeah, and I think just like not attaching your identity to your work is the first place to start with.
Because I used to be Sarah from Yahoo, and that's how people knew me. Right. And the second I lost my job there, it was like so like, well, who am I?
And it's exciting to have that title, especially when you're first starting out.
Yeah,
you're
working
like, this
in
is
media,
what I've always wanted.
Working in media, it's a big thing. Like, so much of where you work is part of the allure, and I stopped caring about what brand I work for. As soon as I stopped caring about that, I realized, oh, it's just like, what is the job? What is the requirements? And that really helped with my work-life balance as well. The one thing I'm not good at is I become very good friends with my coworkers, and then having to balance the like the relationship of coworkers and friendship, that's the one I'm still learning. But work-life balance just comes with when at the end of the day you realize it's a job is a job, and like you could lose it tomorrow. So just don't put too much of yourself into it. Don't say, don't like, you do a good job, but don't like sell your soul for it.
I like that. Third voicemail question. What do you think is the most important similarity between the two of us as co-hosts? That's an interesting question.
I know. And again, I didn't think about it before I put it down, and I had the entire afternoon too. I think our work ethic, I think from like an all, not just as co-hosts,
right, but after
as
people, the question about like, don't work.
No, I know. But like, yeah, but the two of us is like, this is like kind of like a passion project. So
it's, yeah, I'll echo that. Cause it's like, it's work ethic, but it's also like the way where we thrive.
Mm-hmm,
like,
100%.
I think that we could probably say, let's like take on a massive project and do that project to fruition in 7 days.
Yes, we could. We've done it before.
And not even could we. That's almost like what we prefer to do.
Yeah.
Like we were in the studio here and I mentioned to someone, oh, it was January. Like we already started the year. And it's like, oh, we're, you know, continuing on our planning for the year, this year.
Yeah.
And he mentioned like, oh, like you didn't do planning like everyone else does for the last 6 months for what the new year is. Like, no. We're just like,
we just roll with the punches and go with the flow. No, actually I guess maybe because we're both kind of semi procrastinators, but we'll always get it done. It's like, we need the like little rush of like, will we get it done?
Like that's every, probably yeah, like, some, it's toxic, you should talk to some therapist about this. Like,
no, but but we're both, if one of us was that way and the other wasn't, that would be really bad. But because we are both the same way in how we work and our work ethic, that makes it fun.
You know what? I've worked with people on, I don't want to say specifically who, but I've worked with people in the past who personality wise, that was a conflict where they needed a lot longer of runway time, big runway.
No, we're Billy Bishop runway, and like other people need Pearson runway.
We're jets flying off the island.
Yeah, exactly.
In an illegal fashion. But I think the other thing too, like to go back to the first voicemail question, that's the basis of trust as well.
Yeah.
Because I've been in a position where that working relationship hasn't been super positive and the trust is kind of eroded a little bit because they're questioning if you're going to get something done. And it's like, I haven't done it maybe on your timeline.
But you'll still get it done.
Still get it done. And I think that there's, maybe that's the trust.
Yeah. Because we always get it done. It's like when we host events like for Sick Kids and stuff that we've done in the past, you would think that because we said at the beginning of the year, we're going to raise money for Sick Kids, we would have had those planned out way earlier on. No, we would plan them 3 weeks in advance, usually 2.5 was every single event. And we didn't really start working on it until the week before. So it's just because we both trust that we'll get our shit done. So then we always do. And I think that's honestly, it was the same with this podcast. The fact that we took as long as we did with this podcast is actually kind of shocking.
I know. Well, that's on the back end things, like the back end of production. But then I think like just in terms of co-hosts on
the show. Fast, yeah.
I think I do hold my own a little bit. I talk slower than you, but I still think that I talk fast enough to make it at the table here.
Yeah. No, I agree. I completely agree.
And elevation of conversation is sometimes a good thing too.
Like you elevate the conversation?
Like a yes and, you know what I mean?
Yes. Okay. I thought you just were saying that.
Like, as you shut me down on this, it's like, no.
No, I thought you were saying you personally like, oh yeah, I'm Jacob and I elevate the conversation here. I agree.
The way we like to converse.
Yes, I agree. We are on the same page that way.
Even if you roast me sometimes about what I haven't watched or who I don't know.
Exactly. And that will continue to happen. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode of Talking Fast. Make sure you give us a good review, 5 stars, leave a comment if it's nice, and we will see you next Wednesday.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.